how do they build the skills, right, that will help them to do what is best for them and most interesting to them and most fulfilling for them, instead of pushing on them all the things we think they should know and the way in which they should learn it. It's absolutely the flip of that.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Dr. Lorna Bryant, Head of Career Solutions for Pearson Virtual Schools. So Lorna, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thank you for having me. Very excited to be here.
Yeah, we are excited as well. And let's set a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. The Pearson Virtual School is focused on the evolving career landscape by understanding how technology, social media, and demographic shifts are reshaping the job market for today's teens, offering insights into future job market trends and demands. And they provide durable skills for employability and delve into the importance of collaboration, leadership, and communication skills in today's job market, providing actionable strategies for teens to develop these skills and enhance their employability. By aligning these interests with career paths, they explore the value of connecting students' interests and hobbies with potential career paths, offering a practical method for nurturing passions and exploring the diverse career opportunities tailored to individual strengths and interests. And that is the thing I love the most about this. The idea that we are not thinking about all kids are the same, one size fits all, and we're really going to spend time trying to cultivate and nurture those inner passions that our learners have. Lorna, I love that. So let's start with the 100-foot view, right? And talk to us about the why. So why this program? Why thinking about this sort of online space, especially in a post-pandemic world, right? Where folks, we all had to go there. Yeah. And then on the flip side, we're like, we're not sure. Do we want to be there? Do we want to be hybrid? Do we want to be not? Do we want to be something else? Talk to me about how you think about this.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it probably helps a little bit to give some background about myself. I mean, this has been an interesting space to be in for the past, you know, 30 years, which is kind of where I've been doing this work for a long time. So I actually, you know, came over from South Africa, first woman in my family to finish high school. And so was really deeply concerned about how we bring opportunities, right, to people whose families maybe weren't quite sure about how to navigate those channels, right? My family didn't have that context. They had never really been in that space. And so as the first person to finish high school, go to college, what are the kind of resources that I could look to that would help me know how to better navigate my journey and understand how to get to where I was going? And then I started my education career in rural Arkansas. So same thing, a lot of talent, a lot of really smart, talented young people, but without necessarily understanding all that was available to them or that they were capable of doing, right, relative to their peers who maybe had access to more resources and opportunities. And then started, you know, through my own son has special needs, he has autism, and working with a lot of young people with special needs in my educational space, started to kind of look at how technology could help to bridge some of those gaps, right? How could technology create some of that equity, some of that access that maybe was lacking if students just saw what was in the immediate sort of brick and mortar space that they were in and the walls that they were in. Now that was, you know, that was 20 some odd years ago. And as I started to explore this world of virtual learning and online learning, it was just really considered extremely unusual. Like, why would you take young people out of the traditional system in a brick and mortar school and put them online? And so in the beginning, it was really considered more for people with, you know, special circumstances, right? Maybe highly mobile, right? We move a lot, so we're looking for some consistency and we can get that online. Maybe we have some medical challenges. We can't physically be in a building for a while. So, you know, having access to this. Then the pandemic came along.
Fast forward
a little bit.
Right? It did. It showed up.
And for those of us who've been sort of spending a lot of our time saying, this is a very valid way to learn if it's done properly and it's done in a way that's thoughtful and well-structured. And then this happened and everybody went online and I thought, oh no, this is going to put us back years because people are going to equate emergency remote learning with quality online and virtual instruction. But then an interesting thing started to happen, right? Instead of people saying, well, this is awful, we'll never do it again. And there's definitely a component of that. There were some families who started to say, you know, this actually worked pretty well for my child, right? And this worked pretty well for my family. And then we started to see businesses and industry and higher ed start to say as well, maybe there's something to this, right? This flexibility, to your point, some of this, you know, balance between remote and in-person actually has some legs to it and has some value to it. So what we're now seeing, certainly in the college and career readiness space that I work within, is this this opportunity to show how, regardless of the model in which your education is being delivered, there are still the same opportunities available to you in the world of work, whether it's in the skilled trades, whether it's in IT, whether it's in healthcare. For too long, I think people thought, unless you are in those physical spaces getting that training, that if you can't do that, then this is closed to you. And what that did is it limited a lot of people who weren't in big urban centers, right? Who weren't in places where they could physically go in. And we're starting to see it sort of in our space that it's opened up these pathways to more and more people because there's this recognition that with technology, there is an opportunity to really bring more opportunities to more people if we leverage it properly. And so that's what's so exciting about working in the virtual school space, but also working in the college and career prep space, because all these things are starting to come together in a really cool way.
Yeah, they really do. And it's really intriguing to me when I think about the sort of opportunity space. And, you know, in our work at the PATH Foundation, we bump up against all those scenarios that you mentioned, right? You know, we have schools that quickly ran away from online, like you said, that sort of emergency sort of emergence into this. And then we had others who, to your point, had a fair number of families who said, you know what, this did work for us for a variety of different reasons, and we're not willing to go back. And it's really interesting because a lot of districts that we work for then sort of spun off, right, I guess, if you will, an online academy as an option, because ultimately they didn't want to lose their students in their district. Don't blame them for that. And of course, there are a number of different, you know, online providers that are out there in the world, and, you know, their quality and their content and the way they approach it, highly different. You know, they're all very, very different. And we're not here to talk about that today. But the reality of it is, though, that there is something to be said for the intentionality, right? The intentionality of really, really high quality online options. And what sort of drew me to want to have a conversation with you was the intentionality that was around the idea of that career awareness element, which is not something that you typically see in these online learning environments. And the individual nature is something that's often touted, but it's really not around getting to know that individual learner to the depth, right? That is clear to me that is happening in the way that you approach this, and that the way Pearson has approached this as an opportunity to help individual learners really sort of find that ultimate aspiration along the way. So talk to us a little bit about how you do that for the individual learner, because I think that's really where the secret sauce is. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. Right. I think And I appreciate, you know, that reference, because I think there's also sometimes this idea that, you know, students come to online learning so they can hide from something, right? So that they can get away from something. And we're leading, it's the opposite of that, right? How do we get to know you personally? And at the same time, I think an important part of it is, how do we get to know your family and your environment, right, within which you're living? Because we can serve the student, right? We can serve their academic needs. But unless we're looking at it in the context of their entire environment, right? We have students who are, you know, they are supporting families, right? They're helping to support their family. There are students that we have that are, you know, parents already. And so they're needing those additional types of supports as well. So I think it's understanding the student within their context of their whole environment and then looking at how we can, you know, provide supports that way. I think the other piece of this is, you know, we are very thoughtful about understanding as early as possible. And so we're looking at about sixth grade is when we really start to lean into this exploration piece. And it starts with an assessment that is not your, you know, I'd say not your grandfather's aptitude assessment, right? Where we used to give these tests and go, oh, well, because I have X, Y, and, you know, Z skills, I should be a forest ranger, even if that's not something I'm remotely interested in doing. And so we do things that are a little bit more holistic in the sense of, yes, these are my skills. That's great. It's important to know what you are potentially good at. But I think particularly if we think about this generation, these are my interests and these are my values, right? These are the things that are important to me as a human being. And it's, look, I'm not going to dispute. We did a survey. We had about 12,000 students participate. Compensation matters to them, right? They haven't completely thrown out the window, well, I'm not really, you know, I'm not interested in what I'm going to make or living, I'm going to make. I'm interested in that. But it's all within this context of, but I want to, it's how I make my living as much as how much money I earn doing it, right? And that has to align with what is important to them personally. And so as we don't start with, well, what are you good at? So let's put you in, you know, a math track, an English track, right? It's what do you love to do? And I think that's the part that we start with, because when we look at the world today and employers, however you want to look at it, hiring managers, et cetera, more and more, for a lot of reasons, are leaning away from what are you good at and more, how can we sort of help you build those durable skills, those soft skills, those professional skills? And a lot of that comes from understanding what you love to do and what you enjoy doing. So working with our students to say, you know, you may think you don't have a ton to offer because you know, don't have great math is not your thing, right? Science is not your thing. How do we help you understand what you bring to the table? I'm a great leader. I'm a very collaborative person. I'm very innovative. I'm very creative. I'm a great communicator. How do we help you see that and then help you to sort of highlight that and bring that forward as much as, you know, these other academic or technical skills that I think a lot of schools focus on developing without really thinking about how the whole child, you know, needs to be nurtured so that they can be successful moving forward and identify what it is they actually are going to love to do versus just what they might be good at doing because of a limited set of skills. So that's a long way, honestly, Annalise, of answering the fact that when we start with, let's not look at your test scores, let's not look at the things that are academically or technically important as much as let's look at what you like to do as a person, what you think is important to you as a person, and then show you how we can guide you towards a path that actually takes all of that into account.
Yeah. Yeah. I really love that, right? That's the exact same approach that we believe in. And whether it's in, you know, a traditional school setting, an online school setting, a hybrid setting, a school in a city, a school that's rural, you know, it doesn't make any difference. You know, we understand and advocate and believe deeply that if we don't take the time to understand the learner, we are never going to be able to help them craft a journey that is going to be meaningful and powerful and transformative. And we need all of those things, right? At the end of the day, I always ask people, you know, what are we preparing kids for? And universally, you get the responses that you hope you're going to get. You do get those. You know, we want kids to grow up to be passionate and contribute to society and to be great citizens, right? You know, to help us solve the world's greatest problems. And then you sit them down and you put them in a math class for the sake of being in a math class or, right. You know, we're missed. There's a giant disconnect between the stated outcome that you're looking for and the process by which you're trying to get there because they do not align.
That is exactly right. And I think, and I love the idea of like, this is what we expect that you're going to be able to do, right? And young people feel that, right? Mm-hmm. This is the pressure to, I am supposed to do this. Great. That's the outcome. And we hear it from everybody. We hear it from lawmakers. We hear it from experts, right? But there's very little thought given to, yes, but how?
Right.
How how do I do that, right? When we ask these young people these questions and they said, look, they lack confidence. They struggle with connection. Like, how's going to help me do that? I don't even know where to begin. They struggle with direction, right? Like, sure, they're telling me there are all these jobs out there and opportunities out there, but nobody's really sitting with me and showing me how to navigate all the things I have to navigate in order to get there. So the what is great, right? The eventually, that's lovely. But the how do I get there and how is somebody going to support me on that journey right before I get there? We talk a lot about, you know, we sort of, maybe to the point of annoying our peers, I think at Pearson, but we talk a lot about, you know, yes, it's not just about career. It's not just about college because everybody leans into college and career readiness. It's future readiness, right? What do you want to prepare for your future? And I think, you know, a couple of generations back, maybe not that far back, that was sort of considered a little bit squishy, right? They were like, oh, well, I mean, you know, it's all well and good to, you know, want to love what you do, you know, and you'll never work a day in your life, but that's not terribly realistic. And now we're seeing like that's pretty much non-negotiable to some extent. And as we talk to a lot of industry partners, all of whom are like, look, we are struggling. We are struggling to find, we're struggling to find workers. We're struggling to find people that we can recruit and retain. And so as we talk to young people, we want to impart to them that you have a lot of value. You have a lot of power right now, and you have the right to sort of determine the space in which you would like to, you know, in which you'd like to live and work and earn. But let's kind of help you figure out what that is and get you to that place. Because I think industry is starting to see as well that they have to look at their employees a little bit differently. And I think that benefits these young people if we can put those supports around them, you know, in that regard as well.
It does. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm also curious, Lorna, about how you actually mentor a kid beyond just the sort of exposure to a career, to the actual career exploration piece, the mm-hmm. practical hands-on, you know, I'm going to go out and actually try this thing. How do you manage that in an ecosystem that is fully virtual and largely asynchronous? How does that work? How does that student get that piece?
Yeah. So interestingly, and I think somewhat, you know, maybe to some folks, it seems paradoxically, in some ways it's easier for us. Now I say that incredibly carefully because it is never easy to connect young people, right, to high quality work-based learning, high quality mentorships. You know, I think people toss that word around a lot, like, oh, internships, work-based learning, as if companies are just flinging open their doors, right, and welcoming young people in. Doesn't work that way at all.
Not at all. In fact, largely they're like, whoa.
I'm not dealing with this. I don't know. This is no. Yep. Under 18, are you kidding? I don't want to navigate that at all. And sometimes, you know, at best, it's, well, sure, you know, we've got some internship opportunities, which means you can send this young person, they can make some coffee, they can file some papers, right? That's not the same thing. So what we have done is we have taken, you've used the word intentionality a few times, which I love. We've taken a really intentional approach to the partnerships that we cultivate and that we bring forward. There's sort of this idea in a lot of cases that a job board is somehow exposure to, you know, work-based learning opportunities. And all that does is create just sort of this paralysis among young people. Oh, great. I see there are 3,000 companies out there hiring. I don't even know where to start. So we laughingly call it like our bingo board, right? Where we have major areas, right? Major fields, clusters. And we have gone to partners, industry partners who we know have a need, right? They need to identify early talent earlier because they're struggling. But they're willing to engage with our young people in a way that is valuable to our young people. So when we meet with these industry partners, we say two things. We don't want you just to come in and advertise your company. That's not what we're here to do. We're also not here to just create a pipeline for you, right? We're not just going to say, oh, look, they have 100 open jobs. We're going to direct, you know, students to you to apply for those jobs. It takes time to come in and cultivate that relationship and that partnership with our schools and with our young people. And they have to be very committed to having a person or people who are willing to come and actually meet with the students, whether it's in small group sessions, whether it's individual mentorships. They have to be willing to provide both sort of some training opportunities as well as actual clear paths to either internships, mentorships, apprenticeships, or employment. That's the first piece. They have to be willing to sort of engage with the families, because everything we do for our students, we're starting to try to make available to our families, which we know can be pretty transformational there as well. The other thing that we're seeing a lot more of is around this idea of virtual internships. So in the past, it used to be you've got to be able to hold a hammer. Otherwise, how do you begin to participate in the skilled trades? And more, there are organizations saying we can get them really far along that path. Before we actually have to put them, you know, behind the wheel of a truck, or
we can do all the foundational stuff in a virtual setting, and then we are that much closer, right?
And simulations, right? Yep. Simulations are incredible. Virtual reality is really taking it to another level. And so even if our students exist around a state, we can still connect them to, you know, a company that may be 100 miles away, 1,000 miles away from them. They can still engage with industries and industry professionals, even if it's not in their backyard, it's not in their neighborhood. And that has really opened up the doors to a lot of our young people, where we're able to say, you may live in rural Arkansas, but you're super interested in aeronautics. We can connect you, right, to our contacts at Lockheed Martin or other places, so that you can actually understand, is that something you actually want to do? Or maybe more importantly, you suddenly realize it's something you're not remotely interested in doing. So before you make that decision at the most expensive time in your life, which is when you go to college, let's see if we can get you some sense of that early on. So it's intentionally, you know, cultivating partnerships that we know, maybe some tacky, have some skin in the game.
It's not tacky at all. It's absolutely necessary, right? Yeah. For everybody to move forward. I don't think it's tacky. I appreciate you just being transparent about that. You know, I really love all of those elements, because it's true. And we see the exact same sorts of things that you've been articulating.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
One of the things that I know lots of people always wonder about, especially when we're talking about, online learning that is crafted to be largely online and not really more sort of the one of the hybrid models, is how do you help ensure that these students not only find their passions and dig into these incredible careers, but also come out on the flip side knowing how to be human?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it is probably, I don't want to say if not the most, it is one of the most important pieces that we focus on in our schools, right? And it happens in a number of ways. Again, technology has come a long way, right? And so engaging students in technology is not an unusual thing anymore, right? There are lots of opportunities to interact virtually. I talked a little bit about virtual internships. I talked a little bit about project-based learning, so opportunities for students to work even remotely in teams so that they're engaging with one another in that way. But the schools that we support are very, very thoughtful about hosting and coordinating in-person activities and interactions. So a lot of the students that we have will actually get together, you know, in the areas where they are. They actually schedule live in-person socialization opportunities for those students to come and interact with one another, you know, in real life. So a lot of it is built into the school day. There are actually live classes that these students participate in. So not everything is asynchronous. Their teachers do schedule classes. The students come in, they engage with one another. And then there are a number of extracurriculars that they schedule. So between the in-person events, between a lot of the sort of the CTSO activity that we have, we work with HOSA, FBLA, et cetera, for students to participate that way. Then their schools do schedule these socialization opportunities. We have graduations that are in person, proms that are in person, right? So a lot of those quote unquote typical school activities are facilitated at the school level.
Yeah. And that makes sense in terms of the structure. When I was digging around on the backside, I was suspicious that's how that would track out. This is really awesome. Let's talk about the other side. So I love this sort of success path that you've laid out and how well it works for the individual learners. But I also want to be real about the fact that, you know, what we're talking about, it's not easy, right? And so I'm super curious, you know, as you've built this system and this program out, and as others are doing similar things, largely at their local level in other parts of the world, right? They may or may not have the opportunity or the facilitation, if you will, through partnership with larger organizations such as yours. And they're struggling to figure out how to do it meaningfully, do it well, do it with great intention on their own. So I'm really curious from you about some, as this journey has moved forward over all the years you've been involved with this, I have no doubt that you've learned some pretty valuable lessons about what's really important and what's worth letting go, right? Could we talk a little bit about that? Because I think that, you know, our educators out in the world, in whatever capacity they serve as an educator, we're all struggling with this same concept. And it doesn't apply just to online learning. It's really about how do I dig in to the value of my experiences and the lessons that I've learned and then move forward sort of with a new paradigm based on that.
Yeah. So at the most, I think that the thing that, and this is hard for, it's hard for teachers generally, right? So I was in a brick and mortar. I've been in the virtual space. So I've done both pretty much 50-50. First thing I would say, and I don't know if this entirely answers your question, but is that one approach is not better than the other, right? And that there are absolutely students for whom the virtual space, the virtual education model is not a fit. And when you've spent as much time as we have fighting for their right to have this access and to have access to this type of model against all the questions and the slings and the arrows and the doubters, right? It is challenging sometimes for us to say, this is not the best fit, right? There are students for whom this is a wonderful short-term opportunity for a purpose. There are students for whom it is transformational. It has been life-changing and life-altering, and it's been the best thing that ever happened to them. And there are students that if you're using this as a way just to, well, I want to manage their learning at home, or they hate going to school, we have to be very open about that as well. And then on the brick and mortar side, the same thing, right? Just because you are in a structured environment where you can see them every day doesn't necessarily mean that that is the superior, you know, experience for them. So I think we have to, on both sides of the model, say that, you know, what works for some here may not work for others, and be very open about that. And that seems very simplistic. That seems like a very obvious statement. But I think that it has been such a contentious topic for such a long time. And I think we're moving beyond that a little bit, right? As you know, sort of post-pandemic folks go, well, maybe it's not the terrible thing that we thought it might have been. But we still have to be open to the fact that even as more students are embracing it, and even as more students are leaning into this as an option, we have to be very open to whether or not this is in fact the best choice for them, and be willing to sort of have those conversations. The other thing I think we have to sort of, and this, by the way, interestingly, you know, we talk about flexibility in the virtual world. It's the same struggle for us, I think, as our brick and mortar counterparts, is that the traditional day, like we've got to have all the subjects and cover all the things, right? And we've got to make sure every student is well-rounded and has access to everything. That's not necessarily either the best way for students to learn, nor is it the best way to ensure that they're actually going to go on and succeed and you know, graduate and go on and have these successful careers. We meet with a lot of young people who say, look, I just want to get in, focus on what I want to do, and then I'm going to leave and I'm going to go on and enter the field that I want to be in because that's what I love to do and that's where I want to focus. And we have for too long sort of poo-pooed that idea, right? Versus saying, you know what, it's okay actually to let them lean into something that they truly love and are passionate about and facilitate that versus spend this time trying to give them a 6-hour school day that encompasses everything.
Correct. I am so with you. I can just cheer that, right? Because that is absolutely 100%. I agree. And I think that one of the other things that's really interesting too is that we still feel largely compelled to ensure that every child is taught everything. Exactly. And the reality is what we should be teaching every child is how to learn anything when you need it.
Okay, I want to cheer that. So I'm going to cheer in response. That, exactly, exactly. How do they build the skills, right, that will help them to do what is best for them and most interesting to them and most fulfilling for them, instead of pushing on them all the things we think they should know and the way in which they should learn it? It's absolutely the flip of that. And I think we're seeing this generation really push hard on that, which is hard for people to respond to, including their parents. They still look to their parents. They still look to their counselors. But they're pushing on that more and more, and we can resist it, or we can figure out how to lean into it. And I think we will all be better for it.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%, definitely in alignment. And, you know, I have to chuckle because out the window of the sound studio, we've got kids, high school kids, and they came to me a year ago and said, we want to start our own business. And I'm like, awesome. Write me a business plan. We'll evaluate and then come pitch it back to me, right? So they did that. They did it three times. You know, they'd come, they'd do a thing. We're not quite there yet. Go back, work on this, back and forth. And the only reason I share this story is because right now they are in their academic day, however you want to define that, right? But, you know, they're doing their own thing. They're doing it on their own. They're doing it with their peers. They're getting, I don't know how many different credits for the different pieces that you can map back to this experience, right? And they'll spend a couple hours every day doing this business, which is a t-shirt printing and logo wear and, you know, things like that, right? So that's what they're working on. And I can't even tell you how many academic standards over the course of a semester that the kids fully, and they're all in. Like, you go back there and they're working together and they're happy and they're social, and it's an incredible thing, right? And they've got mentors that they work with virtually from all over the world to help them get the thing done that they found because we empowered them to know how to learn when they needed to learn.
Empowered them, right? Empowered. And by the way, gave them the opportunity to see, I can do this. I can do hard things, right? I can overcome challenges, right? And so when the time comes for them to apply to anything, right, to go into anything, they've done the hard thing. They know the skills that they have and that they can bring to bear. So not only can they demonstrate that or talk about that, they've done it. That practical experience, that connection to experiences is the most valuable thing that we can do for our students. And we have such an amazing opportunity to do that. And I think every school district has the opportunity to do that, right? You don't have to be a big organization. You don't have to be all over the world to do that. You can absolutely, even in your small district, and again, not to keep touting technology, but thanks to technology, you can connect with folks from everywhere to help your students develop these things. So I love that you're doing that. I may need to hit you up after this because we're always looking for people who will work with our students on these projects.
There you go. Yeah, no, it is. And the other thing, and it's a lot of fun, right? And I just, you know, the other thing that I'll just close with is these kids, after coming through this experience, right? And I'm sure that you see the same thing in your learners. They no longer need the adults in the space to advocate for them. They can advocate for themselves, right? And at some point, right, the crazy college admissions letters from people will become no longer necessary because these kids, and they can and they should, right, advocate for themselves. And when I watch that happen, that's when I know we were successful.
Amazing. Honestly, you should be our spokesperson because we absolutely do. This is they have agency. They know how to self-advocate. Our job then is to let them do that, get out of their way, and just help them to make the connections they need to make, right? Connect them to the experiences that we know are going to help them to blossom. We don't have to tell them what to think or what they enjoy or what they want to do. We just have to help them get there. And that's, yeah, amazing.
It is.
Not agree more.
Yeah. It is. And again, a lot of fun. Lorna, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your day to come and have this chat with me. I've enjoyed it so much. And I am looking forward to all the great things that are yet to come in your work. I have no doubt.
Thank you so much. Really, really enjoyed it. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.